ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। In the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the subject matter is the three modes of material nature. Those three modes govern every aspect of this material world. And this is explained not only in the 14th chapter, but more in the 17th, and practically speaking, one half of the 18th chapter, Krishna explains how the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, govern everything. Therefore, we can view our life as being a series of choices, one after another. Am I going to act in the mode of goodness? Am I going to act in the mode of passion? Am I going to act in the mode of ignorance? This is actually the challenge of everyone's life. What will be my choice? How will I act? Those of you who are familiar with the story of the Mahabharata, this is illustrated throughout every chapter. We see how the Pandavas, being guided by Krishna or by Domya or by so many good personalities, the Pandavas always executed their activities in the mode of goodness properly. They knew what was to be done and what was not to be done. And on the other hand, we see Duryodhana always acting in the mode of either passion or ignorance, governed by his lust and greed and sinful intentions, his jealousy, his envy. And in this 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the outcome of these choices of whether I'm acting in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, the results are not the same. It is not yata matata pat. That is wrong. If I choose to live my life in the mode of goodness, what does the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita say? Urdvam gachanti sattvasta. You get upgraded. You get a better situation. You get a better situation in this life and in the next life. Elsewhere, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description of how the mode of goodness is enhanced by the time element. In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna sees the Vishvarup, the universal form, he asks him, "Who are you? What is your mission?" And the universal form responds, "I am time, and my business is to destroy, to deteriorate." But if somebody lives in the mode of goodness, the time element enhances. We also learn in this 14th chapter that if I primarily live in the mode of passion, my decisions and how I live is in the mode of passion, what will happen? In my next life, I come back again as a human being. Everything you already did in this life, you're going to have to repeat it. Going to school, going through puberty, getting married, on and on and on. The same thing. No upgrade. You just have to repeat in a different form, in a different body. And then the other, adho gacchanti tamasa. And if I live my life dictated by the modes of ignorance, down, degraded, no human life, no advanced consciousness, take birth as a animal, aquatic, reptile, bird, insect. There are, according to the Vedas, there are 8 million species of life lower than human beings. Why? Because a person decided to live life according to the mode of ignorance. The Bhagavad Gita explains what it means to live by the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. And there is no excuse when we are judged by Yamaraj. We will not be able to argue, I didn't know. That's not acceptable. Just as if you get stopped by the policeman for a traffic violation, you cannot argue with the policeman, or if you have to go to court, well, I didn't know it was wrong to go 100 miles an hour in the school zone. No excuse. You were supposed to know. So, in the human form of life, we are supposed to know what is right and what is wrong. In the 16th chapter, Krishna says, that is the symptom of a demon. The symptom of a demon is, he doesn't know what he's supposed to do and what he's not supposed to do. So at the conclusion of the 16th chapter, Krishna says, therefore, one should know what is duty and what is not duty according to the directions of Shastra. Yashastra vidim utsridya. And the simplest way, concise way to understand what you should and should not be doing, read Bhagavad Gita. Then you'll know how to act, and you'll also know ahead of time your destiny. Yes. There is a familiar expression. Man is the architect of his own destiny. So it's in every one of our hands what my destiny will be. I am creating it moment by moment, decision by decision by decision. Otherwise, why would we would read Bhagavad Gita? Why would we waste our time? Another example. Why do you spend so much time, money, and energy educating your children? I know you Indian people very well. I know every single one of you with your children, you emphasized study. Do good. Am I right? You did that with, and you emphasized it. Because you knew that, you understood. So the same thing applies to our life, every one of us. We are creating our own future. How? By the choices, by the decisions. Therefore, it is very auspicious that you made the decision to come here today. This is not some, how should I say, inconsequential thing. Your decision to come here to worship the Lord, to hear the message of God, has great effect on your future destiny. My spiritual master used to always instruct us that everyone has a book with his name on it. And all your devotional activities are recorded. And don't worry, nobody can mess with that book. Every devotional activity that you have performed, it's noted. My spiritual master said, even the children, when the young child, they don't know what they're doing, but if the young child claps in the kirtan, oh, he gets a point. That's written down. So, one conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, this 14th chapter especially, is to always act piously. Always act out of the mode of goodness. We perform our prescribed duties. Why? Only because it's the right thing to do. Now, I've been studying for the past so many years our American politicians. And what do I see over and over and over again? They don't act for the benefit of the people. How are they making their decisions? What's in it for me? Therefore, they're all rascals. Someone who is in a responsible position has to know what is right and what is wrong and do the right thing regardless of whether I benefit or not. As the Bhagavad Gita says, a person in the mode of passion will perform an activity with an intention of, what will I get in return? Whether it be charity or penance or sacrifice, that's also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. You can perform religion. This sense, sacrifice, charity, and penance in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, the mode of goodness. I should be performing my religious activities, my charity, my penance in the mode of goodness only because I'm supposed to do that. If I'm transcendental, I do these same things out of love of God. If I'm in the mode of passion, I do it because I'm thinking I'm going to get some name. I'm going to get some fame, some profit, some distinction. Everyone will see me. And then when I walk about town, everyone will, oh, see, how there. And of course, you can do sacrifice, charity, penance, religion in the mode of ignorance. One time, there was an asura, vrika, and he was performing a severe austerity in the mode of ignorance. He wanted a benediction from Shiva. So what was he doing? He was cutting his own flesh. Swaha. Right? When you do a homa, you're not cutting your flesh. What are you using? Right? You're using rice or barley with some ghee. Right? That's the mode of goodness. But he's in the mode of ignorance. I'll offer my own flesh into the fire. But Lord Shiva wasn't coming. So then this Vrikasura said, all right, I will offer my own head into the sacrificial fire. Lord Shiva felt so compassionate for this fool. Now he appeared. Only because he had some compassion for this foolish. Because Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. He has utmost compassion for all living entities. When Lord Shiva gave him his benediction, the foolish Vrikasura said, yes, I want the benediction that with my finger, if I put my finger on someone's head, that person's head will crack open into 1,000 pieces. But what was his real intention? Because as soon as Lord Shiva gave him, Tatastu, let it be, he went after Lord Shiva. This is ignorance. The person has given him a benediction, let me kill him. Why? Because he wanted his wife. That was the ultimate thing. I will worship Lord Shiva, get his benediction, kill him, and then I can possess his wife. Lord Shiva ultimately took shelter of Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan bewildered Vrikasura. Narayan appeared as a brahmachari. And Narayan said to Vrika, you must be very tired. You have been chasing Lord Shiva for so long. You should take rest. So by Vishnu, Narayan's mystic power, he put Vrika into a kind of illusion. And then Narayan said, you got a benediction from Lord Shiva? And I don't think, Lord Shiva had recently lost his wife. I don't think he's in a sound state of mind. I highly doubt that he gave you that benediction. Tell you what, put it on your own head. And when you see that it doesn't work, then you can go kill Lord Shiva. So because Narayan expanded his potency, Vrikasura put his finger on his own head, cracked like that. That's just an example of austerity in the mode of ignorance. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us, here are the modes, here are the results of acting in the modes, and as is stated at the end of Bhagavad Gita, yatech yasi tata kuru. The choice, yours. We all have minute free will. That is another facet of the human experience. Minute free will. God has absolute, unlimited free will. We don't. You may not like it, but that's the fact. We do not have unlimited free will. Krishna can do anything and everything, break the law, and nothing happens. Why? Because he's in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Abhigya Swarat. All-knowing and completely independent. We are not. We have free will, but it's minute. We get to choose tamogun, rajagun, sattvagun. Now today, I wanted to specifically speak on one of my favorite verses of the Bhagavad Gita. Before I do that, I would like you to join me in a short kirtan. And then we'll go into one of my favorite verses, because I am in such a wonderful good mood today. Today, I'm giving out blessings free of charge. Hari Haraye Namaha. Hari Haraye Namaha. Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Gopala Govinda Rama Shri Madhusudana. Hari Haraye Namaha. Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Gopala Govinda Rama Shri Madhusudana. Hari Haraye Namaha. Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Gopala Govinda Rama Shri Madhusudana. Hari Hari. So, towards the end of chapter 14, Arjuna asks Krishna a question very similar to something he asked in chapter 2. In chapter 2, Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of a person whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? Very similar into this 14th chapter, Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of someone who is liberated? Somebody who has, because the whole chapter is the three modes of nature. These three modes of nature, the word is guna, rope. When you want to bind somebody, Krishna was bound by ropes, right? So all of us are bound by the ropes of the modes of nature, including the mode of goodness. That is also binding, and that is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So the goal of life actually is moksha, liberation or mukti, to become free from the ropes of the modes of nature. That is the ultimate goal of life. So the third question Arjuna asks, how do I become liberated? How do I do that? And of the three questions, that's the most important. Because if you know the symptoms, and you know how a person asks, that's all right, you're still conditioned. So the best question is, when Arjuna says, so how do I transcend these modes? How do I become liberated? That's why for me, this is one of the most important verses, top 10 verses in Gita. So this verse, those who are students of Gita know this verse. Mangshayo viabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati yaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So what does Krishna say in this verse? He says that if you want to become, now the line here, Brahma Bhuyaya. Brahma Bhuyaya means the liberated status of life. Brahma Bhuyaya means same platform as God. That needs to be understood. Not that you become God, but you're on the same platform. By definition, God is ever liberated. Even when he descends to this material world, he's still liberated. That's an important point as well. Because the Vedas say that if anyone thinks that when God comes, he becomes unliberated, and that person is called Pashandi, faithless atheist. That means they don't understand who is God. By definition, God is always liberated in any condition, any situation, regardless of how it appears. Whether Krishna is dancing in the dead of night with the gopis, sorry, he's still liberated. Whether Krishna kills his maternal uncle, Kamsa, he's liberated. The first demon that Krishna killed was a woman. According to the Vedas, you're not supposed to kill a woman. That was the first demon Krishna killed. So whether it be Krishna or Rama, Narayan, when they come to this material world, whatever they do, it is in a liberated transcendental position. Even if Ram banishes Sita, he's still liberated. For some people, they have a problem. Why did Ram banish Sita? Yes. So, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Actually, we are supposed to be on the liberated status. That is, according to Srila Prabhupada, that is our original position. Originally, like God, we were liberated. Somehow or other, we came to this material world and became conditioned. That is the problem. But here Krishna is saying, I'm going to tell you now how to regain your original liberated position. The beautiful word, bhakti yogena sevate. The answer Krishna gives is that you want to be liberated, you have to be engaged in bhakti yoga. Now, vyabhicharena is another important word. You all know, I know, people in general, they'll go to the temple, church, and mosque one day a week. That's not vyabhicharena. The Abhicharena means that I am linked up with God by this scientific process of bhakti 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, life after life after life after life. It's unceasing, like the name my spiritual master gave me, Nirantara, without cessation. My service to God has to be without cessation, constant. Or as when Kunti, after the battle of Kurukshetra, Sri Sri Radha Raman Bhagavan Ki Jai, after everything was done, Krishna was getting on a chariot to go back to his home Dwaraka. And Kunti and Uttara stopped him. And Krishna saved Uttara from the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama. And then Kunti offered prayers to Krishna. And one of her prayers was, let my devotion to you be like the flowing waves of the Ganges. How many have been to Gangotri? So you see how the water is coming out, right? Gushing. There's no stop, right? Unlike here in California, we have a drought, right? But that Gangotri, does it ever stop? Huh? No. So Kunti was praying, let my bhakti be like that, ever flowing. Ever flowing. And this bhakti yoga, yoga means the scientific process of linking, connecting. So, the great saint Prahlad Maharaj tells us that this bhakti can be done in 9 different ways. And you can do one, you can do two, three. Maharaj Ambarish did all 9. But even just one is sufficient. Maharaj Parikshit simply heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Shukadev Goswami told him, Maharaj Parikshit, when the snake bird comes, you're not even going to be aware of it. Brahma Bhuyaya. He wasn't even going to be aware of the fact that the snake bird came and killed him. Why? Brahma Bhuyaya. He had achieved his liberated position. Shukadeva Goswami achieved his perfection by narrating Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. Prahlad Maharaj, no matter what his father tried to do to him, he simply remembered his Lord Krishna. No matter what the circumstance, Prahlad simply remembered. Lakshmi Devi, she is eternally on the chest of Narayan, Sri Vatsa, curl of hairs, which distinguishes Narayan from everybody else in the spiritual world. Because in Vaikuntha, everybody looks like Narayan. They have the four arms, they have the symbols, they have the same complexion. So how do you distinguish those hairs? The mark, it's called Sri Vatsa, the mark of Lakshmi. So Lakshmi is eternally situated on the chest of her husband. But she says, nah, I want the nectar that the devotees of my husband get. They get something I don't get. They render, my husband's devotees render so much service. They get a certain kind of amrita. I want that. So what does Lakshmi do? Comes down from the chest, down to the feet, and massages the feet. And the husbands are thinking, yeah, when's my wife going to do that? But Lakshmiji does that. She wants that taste of that humble service. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam. We will worship the Lord. Prithu Maharaj in the Bhagavatam achieved his Brahma Bhuyaya by worshipping the Lord. Vandanam, offering prayers. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, we see how Akura has been sent by Kamsa on an evil mission. Kamsa tells Akura, you are related to Krishna and Balaram. I want you to go there. Bring them to Mathura so I can kill them. Can you imagine? But Akura is thinking, oh, this is actually good. I'll get to go to Vrindavan. I'll get to see Krishna and Balaram. And when Akura on his chariot enters Vrindavan, he stops and rolls in the ground because he sees the foot imprints of Krishna. The bottom of Krishna's feet has distinct markings. So Akura could see. So he got off his chariot and rolled in the dust of Vrindavan. The first time I went to Vrindavan in 1975, I did the same thing. I had read that. So I told the driver, stop. I got out. I had my dhoti kirta. I was a brahmachari then, 25 years old. And I rolled in the dust of Vrindavan. So on the way to Vrindavan, Akura was offering beautiful prayers. When Akura was taking Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram, they took a bath in the Yamuna. So Krishna and Balaram took a bath. They got back on the chariot. Akura then went to take his bath. But when he took his bath, there was Krishna and Balaram. But Hey, they were just on the chair. And then Krishna and Balaram turned to Narayan and Sheshnag. So Akura offered beautiful prayers. And then after that, he went back to the chariot, and there's Krishna and Balaram. And they say, did something happen in the water? And Akura was saying, my lord, you are too amazing. I do not understand you. Your pastimes are beyond comprehension. Later, Krishna came, because when they arrived in Mathura, Akrura said to Krishna and Balaram, you must come to my home and eat at my house. And Krishna said, not now, later. So later Krishna did that. He visited. After some time, other things had to be done. So Krishna did that. Akrura washed Krishna and Balaram's feet and again offered beautiful prayers to Krishna, Vandanam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of prayers. So if you want to offer prayers to God, read the Srimad Bhagavatam. For my own benefit, I have taken all the prayers of the Bhagavatam and I have made them into separate files. So anytime, okay, here's the prayers, Arjuna, there's Uttara's prayers, Kunti's prayers, there's so many throughout the Bhagavatam, so many sections of prayers, Prahlad's prayers in the seventh canto. Prahlad offers more than 40 prayers to Lord Nrisimha. And then, after after Lord Nrisimha tries to offer Prahlad a benediction, there is the Prahlad Ashtakam, eight more prayers. So the Bhagavatam, in 10th canto, has so many prayers of the demigods, offering Devaki, Krishna's in the womb of Devaki. Bhagavatam is full of prayers. Even one such prayer you can offer to the Lord, you can achieve Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Archanam Vandanam Dasyam. Good example, Hanuman. Those of you who are pure Ram Bhaktas, Hanuman is very dear to you. I love that story in the Mahabharata, where the two brothers meet, Hanuman and Bhima. And Bhima does not know who is this. He just thinks it's an old monkey. So Bhima is telling the old monkey, can you move your tail? I have to go. And Hanuman says, I'm too old. I'm tired. If you want, you can pick up my tail. Now you know Bhima is so big and strong. Can he lift that tail of Hanuman? He tries, he can't do it. I like that section. Very, very nice. And then Bhima asks him to show him the form that he assumed when he went to destroy Lanka. And Hanuman said, it's not necessary. But Bhima said, no, I have to see that. So Hanuman showed him the tremendous form. And then Hanuman said, actually, my form, I can assume, depending on the time, place, and circumstance, I can show however big I want. Another good example, Hanuman is Dasya. Then you have Sakya. Arjuna, reading the Mahabharata, you see how Arjuna is so dear to Krishna. A couple of times in the war, Krishna saved Arjuna. And Arjuna actually gets angry, and Krishna said, hey, if I didn't do that, you were dead, buddy. So Krishna said, and Krishna said, I'm your chariot driver. It is proper for me to protect you. I did nothing wrong. Your life was in danger. But a couple of times you see how Krishna protects Arjuna. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, there is that incident where Arjuna is about to commit suicide because he had promised a brahmana that he would protect his 10th son. And Arjuna, being the big boastful kshatriya, said, if I can't protect your son, I will commit suicide. Well, the 10th son was born. It flew up into the sky. Arjuna has to keep his word. And from the palace, Krishna can see what's going on, and he's smiling. Now, interesting, and I haven't found why, but when Arjuna made that promise, and when he was called to protect the Brahmin's wife, he took shelter of Lord Shiva. He didn't take shelter of Krishna. I have not researched why he did that. When I read that, I went, what? Wait a second. You're supposed to be Krishna's devotee. What are you doing? So Krishna was watching the whole incident. He was smiling. You would think Krishna could say, well, it serves you right. You didn't take shelter of me. So go ahead, die. But that's not Krishna, is he? No. So Krishna came immediately and told Arjuna, no, no, don't do this. Come with me. And Krishna called his chariot, 4 horses, and they went to the abode of Mahavishnu. So Arjuna, his perfection is that he is Krishna's dear friend. And one incident in the Mahabharata, Krishna, I forget who Krishna is talking to. He says, Arjuna is mine and I am Krishna's. Whatever is mine is Arjuna's. Whatever is Arjuna is mine. We are one. In other words, their friendship, their love, inseparable. Krishna will do anything for Arjuna. And except for this one incident, Arjuna will do everything for Krishna. And then you have the last one, Atma Nivedanam. Full surrender. Bali Maharaj, even though he's the king of the demons, he's still a devotee. And when Vamana Dev comes to take everything away from Bali, Bali had promised, I will give you your 3 steps of land, because that's what Vamana Dev asked. Even though Bali said, why are you only asking for 3 steps? I own the whole universe. I can give you your own planet. Vamana Dev said, no, I'm a Brahmin. If I'm not satisfied with 3 steps, then I won't be satisfied with everything. So Bali said, okay, you want 3 steps, I give it to you. But with 2 steps, Vamana Dev covered everything, up and down. So then, where will I place my 3rd step? You owe me your bill. Where's my 3rd step? And Bali Maharaj said, ah, I still have my head. You can put your 3rd step on my head. So Bali Maharaj surrendered his whole life. And then you have Maharaj Ambarish, Chapan Bhog. He did all 9. He did all the 9 items of devotional service. So here are examples of persons, Brahma Bhuyaya, who achieved their spiritual, original, liberated position. Hopefully, you will want to do that as well. That is the whole reason why we read Bhagavad Gita, why we practice spiritual life. The whole purpose is to achieve this Brahma Bhuyaya, liberated condition. And as I have said in every lecture I have given, easiest, quickest way, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. At least for that few seconds, you were liberated. Therefore, keep on chanting. One more time.
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Just remember Ajamila. Ajamila said the word Narayan, and he was delivered. So the name of God will deliver you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.